And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz on the Net, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the Thursday edition, March 31st, 2022. This is going to be taken up mostly with several lengthy interviews I had with Who'd Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry, who was kind of acting in a slightly different role. He was fulfilling a commitment to Christopher Doyen, also known as Curb Hugger Chris, if you remember him from a decade ago on Free Radio, when he was occasionally a co-host with me. And then, slightly after that, as Commander X, involved in anonymous justice actions to make those who are harassing homeless people in Santa Cruz and Orlando, in Santa Cruz, this city government and the police, and in Orlando, well, the same, pretty much. They were harassing Who'd Not Bombs, actually, and their price for doing that in terms of overloading their computer system for a brief period of time. I think less brief in Orlando than here. Months ago, when Keith and I went to his hearing, also in San Jose, where I guess he combined the cases from Orlando with the one in Santa Cruz and agreed to have another hearing at which he would make a plea, and then after that another hearing, which is coming up in June, where he would be sentenced anywhere up to 10 years, as I understand it, although I thought it was longer, but not according to Jessica York's recent story in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which actually appeared, I think it appeared today, the 31st. This interview kind of ranges back in time to the times when Chris Doyen as Commander X was doing his nefarious activities. And Keith McHenry remembers why and how they impacted Who'd Not Bombs, as well as the Camp 2010 movement in Santa Cruz, which was held to protest court abuses against victims of the sleeping ban. In this case, a very particular individual, the 2-year-old, I think he was 62, Robert Facer, who had paddled down from Sacramento and maybe all the way from Alaska, if you were to believe his story. He was an Amish minister who slept on the beach in his canoe, kayak, and then later went on the next year to help design and create a large tent for Occupy Santa Cruz, and then died soon after. He was being charged with criminal sleeping in Santa Cruz, as many thousands of others through the years have been charged with, even though Santa Cruz provides no places where they can legally fall asleep. And so they've been a human rights violator, every single one of those police officers who did the arrest, every single one of those city council members who either passed the camping ban ordinance and its various amendments or sat back and let those things happen when they had the power to do otherwise. All of them are violators of basic human rights as specified in Constitution, as specified in various treaties, as specified in various internationally agreed upon documents. Chris Doyen was engaged in making those kinds of violations of human rights, the people who do that, pay a cost. And as a consequence, he was eventually, after fleeing and actually living at liberty for 10 years and writing 2 or maybe 3 books and doing lots of video journalism and so forth, he was snagged, deported, seized, taken back from Mexico, and that's where we ran into him. I guess it was on Tuesday the 29th, in San Jose Federal Court. Anyway, that's what most of this netcast is about. There's some other stuff, too. I'll throw in some stories that I think attracted my interest, which I hope interest you. Some of them good, some of them not so good. And actually, I'm afraid it's mostly the latter, but there you go. But listen on and listen in.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Well, I'm here at the being chauffeured over to San Jose by the woman I should be interviewing, but I'm not. Instead, I'm sitting in the back with that old blowhard, Keith McHenry. Hi, Keith.
Hi, yeah, thank you.
And rather than hear historical highlights of your questionable ancestors, what's going on in the reality of today? Why are you here, and where are you going, and what are we doing?
Okay, well, we're going to the Robert Pecknam Federal Building in San Jose to a court hearing, which is, I think, going to be a plea agreement with Christopher Dolan, who's...
It's Doyen to you, buddy.
Doyen. And he is also called Commander X, and one of the reasons that I'm supporting him is that he did an amazing action in Orlando, Florida, when we were getting arrested there, where he disrupted, I actually really don't even know what he did, but I was interviewed by the media there, and I didn't get to see the impact or whatever, because I was busy being arrested and stuff, but of his... I think it was even greater than denial of service. I think they actually put up like images and stuff on the Orlando Chamber of Commerce website and things like that.
Now, you were there to support Orlando's Food Not Bombs against authorities that wanted to severely restrict their activities.
Yeah, so they had created this law, and this is pretty common in liberal democratic cities, where they created an elaborate ordinance designed to make it very difficult, if not impossible, to feed the hungry. So in the case of Orlando, they at one point they urged Food Not Bombs to share food at Lake Eola Park at this picnic area, and they did. They went there. But then that area of town became gentrified in the meantime, and a newly elected city councilor decided that they need to get rid of Food Not Bombs, so they made one arrest.
Now, was he responding to pressure from neighborhood groups like our own beloved Take Back Santa Cruz in Orlando, or why do you think he took that action?
It was actually a woman.
And she.
Yeah, she, and very much like our former mayor, Donna Meyer, she had a lot of money, and she was a hobnobber in the lesbian community, I believe, and so she was very woke, and that was so important because that's how she built a lot of support in that neighborhood, which she had investments in, I believe. And
believe, but had no documentation for.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I do know some other city council people in Orlando did own condominiums and investments in that area, and that's also why they supported it.
Was there any indication that the fee, the meals in, what was the name of the park?
That was Lake Eola Park.
Eola Park actually impacted property values? In other words, were real estate people saying, we're being told they won't buy our properties because of all these meals. Is there any evidence of that?
No, I don't think that was that. You know, it's like everywhere. It's just like homeless people in a rich neighborhood, not a great idea. And so the law was sort of fascinating. So in Orlando, there is this huge number of small ponds and lakes, like Lake Eola. And so they made an ordinance that you could only serve in a park twice a year, and you had to get a permit to do it. And it turned out that then if you went to each of the park, you had to go to all these different random parks. We were doing two meals a week then. So then you'd have to go to one park and serve there twice, and then you'd have to move to another park and serve there the next week. But then it left out, like, if I recall, something like nearly a month worth of, maybe half a month worth of meals that you just plain couldn't serve. And then it turned out the other interesting thing was a bunch of these parks were parks where you basically would have to take a bus a long way, and then you have to walk through a basically between two people's houses to get to the park, which was obviously, those residents wouldn't be too excited about that necessarily.
Local Food Now Bombs there tried to serve in that park and found through discussions or through their own observation that they were getting less clients?
No, they never did. They ignored it. So once they arrested Eric Menendez.
They refused to serve in the park, and they continued serving where they were.
Yeah, they just ignored the law. And then it ended up in federal court, and eventually they lost the in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Oddly enough, became our allies later on in the Fort Lauderdale case. But the
what year was this?
That was the year of Occupy.
2011.
Yeah. So, and we had actually proposed, Food Now Bombs was going to, this is just a total coincidence, but we had, in preparation for this, at the same time, the Fort Lauderdale police had actually raided the Food Now Bombs house, swamp house, in Fort Lauderdale, and broke up the interior of the house, actually kicked in doors, and even though they were renting this place, and they were tormenting Fort Lauderdale. So I had originally went there to Fort Lauderdale to support them, and then we lost the appeal, and then it looked like the 30 days after the losing the appeal, the Orlando appeal. So then, and there was no court case yet in Fort Lauderdale, and so then a bunch of us from Fort Lauderdale went up to Orlando to support what they were doing.
How far away are those two towns from each other?
Oh, I don't know. It's like maybe a 4-hour drive or something like that.
Both fairly sizable communities.
Yeah, Fort Lauderdale is a city, basically. It has its own international airport, and it's essentially part of Metro Miami.
And Orlando has Disney World?
It has Disney World, and it's a pretty large, it's one of the larger cities in Florida. And interestingly, the chief of police, who's an African-American woman whose name I can't remember now, she's now a congressperson for that district.
Of Orlando.
And that was the first day we were arrested, was the day she also, was her last day on the force, which is really funny. And not related to us either in any way, just coincidence. I ended up doing 18 days total in jail there.
And you ended up pleading?
And, I pled guilty ultimately to something and paid a few thousand dollars to the city.
This is not always typical. On occasion you've done this, but generally you go through the courts in the hopes that a jury will take an effect or the judge will, see sense, or is that, what's been your, how does that compare with your past experience?
Yeah, usually, except for the three strikes case, which is I pled out on.
1995?
95, yeah, I usually don't, but I was miserable. Like, that, So I had a deal where I didn't even, where it wasn't going to be a issue, but as I was about to walk into the courtroom where the judge had agreed to release me, and I would be able to go to, you know, have a trial, because I just could not stand it. I had fibromyalgia, and it was very painful. I couldn't call out to anybody, and it was freezing. And that's definitely the worst jail experience I've ever had.
What month was this?
And that would have been... Well, I watched the fireworks from Disney World from the, like, a tier that you could peek out the window of. So there in the 4th of July.
It was New Year's Eve.
No, it was 4th of July, because...
It was cold even then.
Well, in the jails, they keep it at 53 degrees, right? So, and they give you like a little thin cotton thing. My underwear was a size small, so that didn't work. So I just basically, and then a light was on you at all times, 24/7, right above your head in the cell, and you couldn't, the only place you could have a blanket was in your cell. And I shared I shared the cell with two other guys who were interesting. They were fundamentalist Christians, and it was an interesting conversation. We had a lot of conversations about Denny's, actually. And
Denny's the restaurant.
Yeah, because they both like enjoyed Denny's, and the one guy had worked in Denny's forever, so we discussed just talked about the different meals you could get in Denny's. It was really weird. And
you spent 18 days there.
Yeah, it was like a nightmare. I was freezing.
And during that time, it was Chris Doyon, aka Commander X. I called him Kerbugger Chris, was engaged in, or has been accused of, and is maybe now pleading to, having sort of overwhelmed the Orlando authorities with, what's it called, DDS attacks?
Denial of service attacks. I don't know what he, I got the impression and that he actually put up images of me and of others being arrested on websites that with the text that said "Free Keith McHenry, Free Food Not Bombs." This is what I got from two TV reporters who interviewed me when I was in jail, and they were like, their questioning was two typically blonde Central Florida, young women that almost every TV program back then, it seemed like, probably had. I don't know. It just seemed very Central Florida. And they thought I was somehow doing this from inside the jail.
Were you masterminding this?
Yeah. They asked me how I was doing it from inside the jail. So that's what gave me the impression.
Did you tell them how you did it?
They said I had no idea what was even going on until they had... And were interviewing me, and
so you denied the accusation.
Yeah, and I asked them if anybody had fallen off because they said I did millions of dollars worth of damage, and didn't I feel bad about that? And I go and I tried to buy copies of the video, but the dude never sent them to me because that would have been interesting to see the story, I asked if anybody fell off a ladder or anything as a result and got injured, and they didn't seem to think that happened. And then I also asked them if Disney World and these places that he was supposedly disrupting had telephones so that they could people could call to book their holidays. And they weren't clear about that either, or they didn't comment on that. And so anyway, that was how I knew what was happening. But then later on...
What was your motivation in asking about the phones?
Well, I just thought it was weird that anybody would care. So from that perspective, they've supposedly disrupted these tourist sites. And I thought, well, before the web, people just called up, Disney World and said, I'd like to book, I'm going to come with 10 kids and can... how much is that, and we'll come there.
But the business that was supposedly lost was because the new approach to booking reservations at Disney World was online, and if the online service was disrupted, that would mean disaster for the orphans and children who are supported by Disney World.
Yeah, it would be something like that, and I think that's what they're implying. Yeah. So, but you know, I it's early on in the in cyber type stuff and like that. Cyber. So, I mean, it seems like Chris was sort of a
forerunner.
Yeah, a pioneer in cyber civil disobedience, and so that was my experience there. And then also, I was interviewed by Liz Tadich, and she was a filmmaker from Australia. So there's three different reporters, Liz being one of them.
Now, was an actual video made of this whole incident that can be accessed online or somehow?
Well, I'm trying to get the video from the two TV companies, but I've never...
That was 11 years ago, and nothing has happened since?
Well, I tried... when Chris and I started doing the live broadcasts out of San Lorenzo Park, that's when I did it.
That was last year.
Yeah, that was last year. So, so that once I got out of jail, it was the same time as that woman that supposedly killed her daughter or whatever, that was a famous, it was what the second TV court drama after O.J. Simpson. I forget her name, Casey somebody or other or something. And so I was released at the same time she was released, and she'd won her case. And oddly enough, the inmates, because she was a celebrity and it was on TV every day, that was the big news all the time was that. And every once in a while I would get somebody get arrested and moved to, because you had to, back then I had fibromyalgia and I'd gone cold turkey on morphine and Percocet, and so I was freezing, I was extremely uncomfortable, and then you have to get processed, there's like a processing area that you go in for 7 days, so I did that, and then I was put in this horrible cell area, and God, I was miserable through that whole thing. So then people that would get out of processing and put it into our unit would say, oh yeah, you know, 7 days ago, you were still getting arrested, serving food downtown, you know, so that's how I would know. But, what was happening. And, and then back then, yeah, you couldn't call anybody, I couldn't talk to anybody, I had no idea what was happening outside, it was just like stuck in this freezing.
And even though
place.
We began this sort of just to kind of follow the case that we are now going to hear, I don't know whether it's the final chapter, but the latest chapter of any reports on what's happened in Orlando since then regarding Food Not Bombs. Has Food Not Bombs backed off? Are they still doing the same amount of activism they were? Or have authorities backed off? What's going on?
Okay, well, that became interesting. So, Mayor Buddy Dyer was kind of the point person in all this, he was this one denouncing us and so on. And so Liz Tadich was there to work on this Food Not Bombs documentary, and she does have video of her interview with me in jail. But she came up with this name, oddly enough, Bombs or Broccoli, and then she changed it to Food Terrorist. So she had a release form to interview Mayor Dyer, and it called it the Food Terrorist. And so then he then ended up on TV calling us Food Terrorists, getting the idea from this release form that he'd signed with Liz. And that made like a lot of news. And in the end, the thing was just so out of control. People kept coming from all over Florida to get arrested. And he then agreed that he said, look, we'll stop the arrest if they start serving food outside of City Hall. And I'll even add a peppers from my own garden to their soup. Well, that happened, I think, while I was in jail, maybe right after I got out. And then... And so then they just started doing their twice weekly meal there, and that's where they've been doing it ever since.
In front of City Hall.
And it's a much better location by light years better location for Funa bombs than Lake Eola Park, because
it's the mayor's response to concerns about people coming to Eola Park, or how far away from Eola Park was City Hall?
Oh, it was like four blocks. Yeah, so it was very close. And but the great thing about, so what Lake Eola Park is kind of like where the picnic area is. It's like a little side road, so virtually nobody ever went by there, and no one ever really saw the meal. It would have been completely ignored had it not been for this legal situation. Whereas City Hall is at right where the all the different main intersections of town come together. So people will see this huge line that wraps around City Hall twice a week, one for breakfast and one for a lunch. So it's from a political organizing Food Not Bombs point of view, it's a many, many times better. So the so we've never been bothered in Orlando ever since. And
Food Not Bombs continued to serve or not?
Through the pandemic, they did a lot of like boxed meals that they went around handing out, but I think they're back to City Hall now, and it's not been, and they've gotten to be much larger organization than they were at the time.
Do they have a literature table?
They did when I was there, but I don't know if they are.
Do they support political actions in Florida?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
And now a bit of a pause, as I've been doing regularly with these netcasts. Little music from Charlie King.
I worked with Katya at the factory. She always did her job okay, as far as I could see. Lunchtime one day, she got nostalgic for her youth, growing up in wartime under a different truth. She told me, when I was a girl, I loved a soldier in the SS. They only picked the strongest ones, the healthiest, the best. They weren't monsters, they were like your Green Berets. We never wanted to kill Jews, we just wanted them away. And you know we gave them lots of time, until Kristallnacht sealed their fate. We only wanted them to emigrate. We'll give each Californian a plastic picture card. If you don't have your papers, kid, well, life is hard. The past laws have arrived here in America at last. You used to get a meal in school, but that's the past. Just take your chances in the street, but do it out of sight. We know you'll get along until your crystal night. Your teacher has to turn you in. She doesn't really hate. We only wanted you to emigrate. Kristallnacht is coming, little Mexican child. A night of breaking. A night of running wild. Run sick and in the streets until Kristallnacht seals your fate. We only wanted you to emigrate. forsake your little crimes. You're better off in Mexico, although you grew up here. And if your folks won't take you back, there's this to fear. Alone and in an alley, your breaking glass will come. It won't get in the papers if we do it one by one. It's all about the bottom line. It isn't really hate. We only wanted you to emigrate. Kristallnacht is coming, little Muslim child. The night of breaking glass, the night of running wild. Stay home and off the streets until Kristallnacht seals your fate. We only wanted you to emigrate. We only wanted you to emigrate.
That was Kristallnacht is Coming, sung by Charlie King, or maybe recited by Charlie King, from his album Life and Love, Tears and Laughter, to Keith McHenry. That's McHenry, actually.
Still do.
Yeah, they still organize.
The last action that you heard they supported?
Oh, they...
Are they mobilizing to support the poor Ukrainians?
I have no idea about that. I know, you know, on occasion, if there's anti-homeless laws, they will resist those.
Talking about the Orlando Food Not Bombs, still having a strong basis of political support for peace and justice actions there in Florida. Actually, where we began the interview, this section of it, we'll hear more. Subsequently, there was a lengthy interview after the actual hearing, but first, more music.
Spoon of sand can tip the balance. Drops of water turn the mill. Way out here, over the rainbow, someone standing, singing still. You weathered the storm, you finished the race. We see by the weary smile upon your face, you've stumbled and risen. You sang up the dawn, you kindled the fire, you carried the torch, you're passing it on. Spoon of sand can tip the balance, drops of water turn a mill. Way out here, standing, singing still. Dark clouds on the mountain, dead fish on the shore, the bottom line bankers, the vultures of war. You turn and you face them, and when push comes to shove, somehow you believe hate has to surrender, surrounded by love. Spoon of sand can tip the balance, drops of water turn a mill. Way out here, You charted the waters, saw the river run clear. You raised the sail when we thought the journey would end in despair. At the darkest hour, on the edge of the dawn, you caught the first light, you gave us the vision to carry it on.
Spoon of sand, spoon of sand,
and tip the balance.
Drops of water,
drops of water,
turn a mill,
turn a mill,
way out here, over the rainbow. Someone standing, singing still,
way out here, over the rainbow. Someone standing, singing.